back, WNST, Towson of Baltimore, and BaltimorePositive.com. We are, these are the good days. If this isn't one of the best weeks of radio I've done in 32 years and a couple of months, my 39 years into journalism here and doing this, watching the Mayflower, journalism career began 8 weeks before the Mayflowers, like six different times as a kid with Chris Pica before the Mayflowers moved. And we have an AFC championship game here this week. Luke Jones is our guest. He will maybe not be with us at all 2 weeks from now. He might be out in Las Vegas, but we're doing one of the greatest things that I've concocted in my concoctions. Luke, this is better than running through the streets in my underwear. It is. I don't know that it'll really be better than Whiskey Joe's or than the parade was in the march down in New Orleans. But we're looking to start something special this year with me being extracted from Radio Row and from Super Bowl coverage and from the career that I've built here over four decades by Chad Steele. We've decided to do something different this year. So we're going to do something called Crab Cake Row, and we're going to offer everyone in our community a free cup of soup or bowl, a free cup or soup or bowl. We're going to do this in five different locations, all with the Maryland Lottery. I'm going to have some O Snaps to give away, some Raven Scratch-Offs to give away all day long. Our friends at Window Nation, our friends at Jiffy Lube Multicare, all of our sponsors are in on this. Wise Markets, Royal Farms, they all do for the Maryland Food Bank. And every single year is a guy named Wayne Kostrowski, Luke. I don't know. Did you ever meet Wayne from Taste of the NFL? Was he ever on set?
I'm sure I did at some point in time. You meet a lot of people on Radio Row, so it's tough to put faces with names all the time, but I definitely remember that name, that's for sure.
Wayne and I got together 2 weeks ago on a Zoom, and I haven't seen Wayne in a number of years. Wayne, Google him, Kostroski. Wayne Kostrowski, he was the founder of Taste of the NFL. And he dreamed up this idea back in the 80s and took it to Tagliabue's people and said, we're going to do this party the night before the Super Bowl. And it's going to be like a ball for those who aren't in the league or have this or whatever. But we're going to have Miss America every year. We're going to have a player and a representative from every team and a chef. Nancy Longo, my dear friend, love Nancy at Pure Point Restaurant, was the chef every single year. They always had a celebrity every year with somebody sort of different. Matt Stover settled in for a little while, but over the course of time, everybody's done it. Marty Bass and I did it and sat in for Ernest Biner, who was coaching on the team who had agreed to do it. And then the Ravens made the Super Bowl and he couldn't do it. So Marty Bass and I were the celebrities in Tampa at the convention center. So it's a party, had thousands of people, great food, lots of celebrities, always celebrity chefs. Andrew Zimmern has been on my show many times, if you remember him sitting in. So Wayne did all of this for hunger. And by the end, had Coca-Cola and airlines and all sorts of people involved in it. And very much like what Ed Block is here, it was a Super Bowl-oriented night before in an awesome location every year. Jacksonville, Miami, wherever it was a great party. Indianapolis inspired me, Luke, and I had to tell him this. And we had there were some tears involved in this. And I know you have some spirituality about you, Deacon Jones. So we got to talking about being inspired by all these years of me going to this party and eating, sometimes having an upset stomach on Super Bowl, because I mixed too many oysters with too many steaks, with too many wines, with too many REO Speedwagons and Hootie and the Blowfish. I mean, all these great bands would play that gig. Bare Naked Ladies played that gig 1 year. Amazing acts. Brooks and Dunn played 1 year, as I remember, country acts. They do it all. So Wayne inspired me because all of this was giving hundreds of millions of dollars to hunger. And Luke, the year in Indianapolis, and I do speak of that Super Bowl very fondly, as you know. Like, that was probably my favorite Super Bowl for a lot of reasons. It was very well contained. It was like a state fair. It made me not hate those people anymore. So that was, there was some spirituality for that for me. And I know what Jimmy Irsay has been through with overdose last month, the whole deal. Right. So that year Wayne did the event at the food bank, at the warehouse in the middle of East Bejesus. I mean, it was like in the middle of nowhere, and thousands of people got in and nobody could leave. because cabs didn't want to come find us on Saturday night Super Bowl when Indianapolis, there was no transportation. And we all got stuck at the food bank. We were there the whole night. By the way, this was a very spiritual night for me, Luke. I took a camera up to Al Bubba Baker. You're a historian. Do you know who Al Bubba Baker is?
Tell me.
He is the Tony Siragusa to the Rich Gannon. He is the guy who landed on Burt Jones and hurt Burt Jones
Okay.
forever, which really changed the franchise because that
Oh,
kind of
yeah.
moved the franchise. I mean, had Burt won a Super Bowl in 79 or 80 and Ursay in the city, and who knows, right? We might still be wearing horseshoes here, you know, but ifs and buts and candies and nuts and all that. But from a historical perspective, he was the Cleveland Browns celebrity that night at their chef table. And I had a camera with me because it's probably 2009, whatever it was, 10, whatever year that was, 11. Well, you remember better than me, 11, I think. But the Indianapolis year, I went up to him with the camera and I told him who I was. And he told me he meant to hurt Burt Jones, that he did it on purpose, and that he would do it again. And I'm like, wow. I think that was, you know,
At least he was honest, I guess.
As we were in the middle of the food bank in Indianapolis. So I told Wayne that I am indebted to him, inspired by him, and where he stuck me in a food bank in Indianapolis, and I got stranded until 2 in the morning night before the Super Bowl. We ate well. We had a lot of wine, and in the end, it all worked out great. It was actually phenomenally great. We got a great cab ride. As it worked out. But nonetheless, it worked out to inspire me for Carmen Del Guecho and the folks at the Maryland Food Bank here. And John Maroon, who's been very, very helpful throughout the course of my life and career, works with those folks as well. So we're going to be doing every single day free soup for you, your mom, your sister, even your niece. We got to bring her out, get her some crackers. And so you get crab soup or cream of crab soup. And come on out, free soup. All of our places are offering it all week, in exchange for you bringing some good stuff for the Maryland Food Bank and hang out, do the show. It's going to be, and we're going to get into this with injuries and all this stuff, Luke, as to I'm this close to making it a giant purple pep rally. It's going to be live radio. Stuff's going to go wrong. We're going to get kicked off the air. It's going to snow a foot on Tuesday, and I'm going to be over at Costas like the goof on the roof. I'm going to pull my purple Santa hat out again. But they got to beat Patrick Mahomes, right? Like, now, here we are, and we'll get into the sports part of this, but I just want to give everybody, I'm very, very excited about this and what we're doing for the Maryland Food Bank that week, and we are featuring 100 charities. So Ness at BaltimorePositive.com. If you have a charity, please get it to me this week because I'm trying to get all this organized by Sunday because next week might get a little kooky around here. I have a feeling right around like 5 o'clock Friday this weekend, we go on a purple bender unlike anything we've ever seen. And we could talk about that celebration and what we missed out when Keith Urban played down at the Harbor and we got our ass kicked out of Mile High Stadium by Peyton Manning, who showed up. He wasn't bad luck this week. He was for the first half. Luke, I guess so much on the minds for people this week with the game and injuries, and John will be coy. Marlon Humphrey, huge, right? Mark Andrews could be huge, would be huge. Nice to have the real Mark Andrews, whatever we get. But I'll take mine against theirs. 3.5-point favorites. You got to beat Mahomes to get there. You didn't have to beat Allen. They tap danced around with the Texans the other day, and we went through that. But the Chiefs are a little beaten up too. But I keep saying heavyweight fight, man. This is thrilling Manila, Rumble in the Jungle. You know, this is epic, as we would say here, man.
No question about it. I mean, to be the man, you got to beat the man, right? I mean,
woo!
You're an old school wrestling guy, but I think one of the underrated storylines coming out of Saturday's win over Houston in the divisional round was the Ravens didn't report any new injuries. Now, that doesn't mean there won't be a couple guys on the injury report that were banged up over the course of Saturday's win, but they did not go through, you know, they did not lose anyone to a concussion, at least during the game. You know, there's always the possibility of a concussion protocol situation, but, you know, they appeared to get out of that game healthy, you know, really healthy as it pertains to late January now. So that was good to see. I mean, you just really nailed the two questions for the week. It's going to be, where is Marlon Humphrey? I mean, You know, he hasn't played since New Year's Eve when he hurt his calf. So I would think if we don't see him at the beginning of the practice week, then it's probably not happening for him this week. You know, that you're talking about a 3+ week layoff. And I think what was, you know, I mentioned this last week in passing, but you know, we saw him doing some running and some agility work during the bye week when they had a few practices. I saw him out there 2 different days. So, you know, did he have a setback? Was it just a case where the calf just wasn't responding well? You know, did it tighten up? Whatever. But they didn't have him out there. Now, I think we've seen over the course of the year, and I say this with as no knock on Marlon Humphrey, who's a 3-time Pro Bowl corner, their defense has done fine without him. You know, he's missed what, 7 games over the course of the season. So they're not strangers to him being hurt this year anyway. So you'd love to have him. You'd much rather have him than not, as is the case with any player.
Dude, it's starting to get almost to, and I love Jimmy Smith, who did not text me back this weekend. Jimmy, I'm looking for you. I'm looking for you. Where you better be hiding in Lahaina someplace or hiding in Maui or Kauai, wherever it is. Now, I love Jimmy, but I mean, he got banged up at the end, and it's like, we felt this way about Ronnie Stanley for a period of time, and now they're spelling him, which is an interesting concept offensive line-wise. Talk about revolutionary concepts. I mean, I remember when the relief pitcher came in sometime between, you know, 60 and 73, where it became essential, and then agents leveraged it, and it's a thing. And then, you know, running backs aren't a thing now. To Chad Wiesling, we got to get a crab cake. You, me, and Chad Wiesling, we're going to get a crab cake sometime around Combine to talk about running backs and value and all of that. But you start to talk about what's valued and what's not valued, and where, how you build a roster and how you lose players. Boy, there's so much just that goes into the balance of the money for these teams and the investment on these teams. And what, you know, Orlando Brown's played on both of these teams, right? Like, who you count on, who you don't. Terrell Suggs, I wonder who he's reading for this week, right? He's got a ring, right? He's got a Chiefs ring. It's
he
great,
does,
right?
He does.
So you think about these things. And I do love that I'm celebrating these 25 stories of glory we're doing with Curio and Foreign Daughter, and we're counting them down. And there's this picture at the AFC Championship game of me and David Modell holding the Lamar Hunt trophy, the old, big old trophy. Now, the newer one's like more like a football, and it's like a space age. Looks like
weird.
A World Cup
yeah.
kind of thing, right? I have a picture of me with that in Foxborough 10 years ago. I'm like, the hell's that? Give me the trophy that looked like – it looked like – a bowling trophy, or like the trophy that would be hanging at the Roll Arena at Skateland for winning the skating. It was this long wooden thing, and it's me and David Modell holding
it. Had the little AFC logo on it. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, we're on the dace at the in the black hole, you know, in Oakland, Oaklandia, and we're holding the trophy, and Art's in the background, and you know. And it's the Lamar Hunt Trophy. And I'm thinking, Lamar, what a weird name. I don't know any Lamars. I didn't grow up with any Lamars. Yeah, you know, I went to Dundalk. No Lamars. I don't remember Lamars. And then, Lamar Hunt was one of the more famous. Lamar Hoyt, you know, pitcher. Yeah, but there weren't a lot of Lamars, you know. And now, like, we have a Lamar looking to win the Lamar this week. So I sort of love that as well. It's sort of a throwback when you get to be older. But – what a you know, what a beautiful quarterback story, and the two best, and we want this Manning Brady thing. We want this, you know. I guess Johnny, you had peers, you know, across the sport at that time, but we would say Joe Namath when he came in, and you'd see Staubach and Bradshaw, and like all of that through the course of time. We're in the middle of one of those, and the rivalry was always Ray Lewis and the Steelers, right? Like that's, it was Steelers Ravens, but behind that, there was a Manning Brady thing going on for a long, long time where Manning couldn't get through. And this is really the pathway for Lamar's greatness. Forget his contract, his money, whatever, anything about him, but for championships and for what you do when you, and how you do it. And I have Joe Flacco on the show this week, and we can talk to him and Brian Billick and other people that have actually done it. Lamar needs to do it. And this is the here and now and best chance in so many ways. And I like that the testicles got shrunk big time at halftime. You know what I mean? For them to have gone through that last week at 10-10 at halftime, to have everybody on TV questioning, we're going back up to Joe Buck and Aikman. Oh, it's 10-10. Here we, you know, like, and for everybody in the locker room, and again, my locker room access has been taken away after 39 years of doing this. Tell me about that, because like, how it seems to me that people must have had something to say about that afterward, because Lamar must have had fire, and at some point, somebody has tape of that. That'll surface on the 30 for 30 when Lamar's Michael Jordan and wins his fifth championship. You know, like literally, whatever happened at halftime while I was sitting here watching the Ravens circle the drain in the conversation, at least on the field, to the booth, every social media, everywhere. And he did something in there that apparently means something that would be a lead story in Purple Rain 3, maybe.
Yeah. I mean, they weren't circling the drain. I mean, but it was unnerving, right? I mean, they were in a position that they didn't want to be in, where it's 10-10 and you're not playing your best. You have a Houston team who hadn't done a whole lot, but hey, it's tied. And it's like, okay, how much can you keep asking your defense to completely shut them down? You know, hey, let's go. Come on. Okay. We're rusty in the first half. Let's go. It's go time.
If the kid doesn't miss the kick, they're losing.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, sure. But, you know, I think at the same time, Lamar is not the most vocal guy. I think that's evident. But at the same time, the sense I've gotten this year is that he has been more vocal than in the past. And I think he is one of those guys that, while he's not going to stand up and give a Ray Lewis speech to the team every single week, he is someone that when he does speak up, I think his words do carry a little more weight, where you kind of say, hey, whoa, you know, it's kind of like, you know, if you grew up in a family where
Dad didn't raise his voice, but
when
he did,
it's like, whoa, hey, it gets your attention really quick.
Yeah,
I think that's, you know, that's the general sense I got from what happened on Saturday night. And I don't think it was anything overly profound. It was just like, hey, come on, we're better than this. Let's go take care of business. You know, and I think, again, a lot of that did have to do with adjusting to the Houston blitzes. So there was some substance to it, but I think a lot of it was, you know, specifically speaking from the offensive side, which obviously Lamar plays on the offensive side of the ball, was, hey, our defense is playing great. We need to pick it up. You know, we can't keep asking our defense to all but shut them out. You know, they'd given up 3 points, you know, understanding the touchdown came on the punt return. So, you know, I think it was just one of those situations. So, you know, I don't know if it's this, you know, transformation kind of moment as much as just the evolution of Lamar Jackson. You know, we've talked a lot about it in terms of him on the field this year and where he was as a rookie to where he is now, you know, in terms of how he plays, but also just the maturation of a young player, the maturation of a quarterback. You know, I mean, this is a guy who experienced a lot of failure. You know, when you're in the midst of that failure, you know, that's all people want to focus on. And look, your legacy is defined by January. We understand that. I mean, Peyton Manning is viewed differently now than he was in 2003. But I think if you go back to that point in time, understanding it was pre-social media, but still the internet, there was all kinds of talk about Peyton Manning not being able to win the big one. And, you know, that you mentioned the Brady Manning factor, even though this current era, it's been a little more Mahomes Allen, because Allen has, you know, they've faced off with the Chiefs more frequently in the postseason. But, you know, Buffalo hasn't broken through. And Josh Allen right now is kind of playing that Peyton Manning role in that, you know, in that light, you know, not that they're similar players. So, you know, for Lamar, this is a unique opportunity because he's finally facing Mahomes and the Chiefs in January. So, you know, I think, you know, you just look at it through that lens. I mean, what more can you ask for? You said it, for all the greatness we've seen in the regular season, the fact that it did translate and carry over to last Saturday against Houston. Okay, we can stop talking about the Titans, right? We can stop talking about, when is Lamar going to play at a high level in a playoff game? He did it. Now this just becomes much more of the run-of-the-mill, hey, this is an opportunity to build your legacy. This is a chance to break through. You're facing your, you know, you grew up watching Tom Brady win all those Super Bowls. You're facing this generation's Tom Brady, and you have a chance now to one-up him. You have a chance now to unseat the Chiefs and get to your first Super Bowl.
And your
and
best
win one.
Chance, and maybe your best chance ever, given the talent around you and where you are and the home game and the rest. And just
sure.
And the fact that Monken may be gone next week, as well as the, I mean, like there's a real movement here that the band's going to get broken up in a pretty significant way. Now, you would always say, we got Lamar, they got Andy, they got guys under contract, they got good football players here. No doubt about that, but there is going to be a changing of the guard in probably a massive way per the scale of football and what John would want in the and what Eric would want in the offseason. But they know this is coming.
Yeah, I mean, right. And look, I mean, there's only so many chairs at the table. It's not a guarantee that Mike McDonald and Todd Monken are gone, but you know that you're going to at least lose some guys from your coaching staff, whether it's your coordinators or whether it's some really key assistants who become coordinators elsewhere. It's the nature of the business. You're going to have free agents, all that. By the way, Kansas City's dealing with the same thing. Buffalo, in a big way, is going to be dealing with that. That's why the disappointment for the Bills to not get to an AFC championship, considering where their cap is.
Well, hang on a second. Let's say Kubiak, nobody ever came and called for him. Let's say Manning's done. His neck screwed up. He doesn't go to Denver and play. Kubiak loved it here. Didn't want to leave. He loved Joe. And it all went away after that, right? Like, to some degree. Yeah. And, you know, I mean, coaching, it's a reason they pay all these guys all this money. And it's a reason that D'Amico Ryans, and to for all of his faults and warts, John Harbaugh can survive this all these years, as well as Mike Tomlin. They adjust through every Matt Canada and every Bruce Arians. I mean, Tomlin's had, I mean, John fired his offensive coordinator in week 13 and then won the Super Bowl 8 weeks later. I mean, you think he doesn't think he's a genius? You know what I mean? His owner tells him he's a genius. Everybody tells him he's a genius. You get some feeling that you can't do much wrong, especially when you do all this right. And you just say, well, I'll just, you know, I got another guy. They always have a short list of who next up is anyway, right? But this is for a limited time. They have 2 hours of football, and they got to earn the second hour by winning the first hour right now. And as it's comprised, back to Lamar, this is his best shot. And I do want to – you were rambling on about quarterbacks and Josh Allen not making it. How about Phillip Rivers or even like Dan Marino? But let's go through a whole bunch of Warren Moons. And I'm trying to think of Randall Cunninghams and just tons of guys that were really – Matt Ryan. Oh my God, Matt Ryan, right? Like had 3-touchdown lead. Like all of the Jim Kelly. None of these guys won. Yeah. And you know what I mean? And they all played in all these big games. They won a couple, they lost a couple. I mean, Jared Goff got to a Super Bowl and he's yesterday's trash, right? Like, and now he's on the cusp of doing it again. And so Garoppolo got to a Super Bowl. Now, you know, Ryan always twists his ring, man. He stands there, all 6-7 of them, and he comes out and gives his speech in his suit. I've seen him do it, you know, 100 times. Brian's going to be on this week too, by the way. And I'm going to give him some ish about this. He would always say, you know, when you win a Super Bowl ring, they say they'll never take it away from you, but that won't stop them from trying. And you know, the greatness of all of these players that I've laid out who didn't win, who didn't have a chance to win, or weren't in the right position. Cal Ripken after the first year, right? Second year, 2 years and never got a chance to be on this stage again. And it's not just about the quarterback, to your point. I mean, the special teams put the Texans in a position to talk ish about Lamar at halftime because the defense was playing. The story would have been the defense and they're struggling, but they're doing okay had the special teams not made it a tie game, right?
Yeah. I mean, and look, what you just laid out, and this is why I think it was so important for Lamar, for him, where he is at this point in his career, understanding that there's no guarantee you're going to win Sunday. And look, if the Ravens don't win Sunday, it's going to be very disappointing because they were the best team in the league this year. But we also know the best team doesn't always win. But I think what was so critical, because of what you just laid out all these different quarterbacks, including some Hall of Fame quarterbacks that you just mentioned, who did not win a Super Bowl. But for Lamar, his win and his performance against Houston, for me, it normalizes the conversation about Lamar Jackson in the way that, all right, you know, he's not this guy that's played terrible football in his first three or four, even though he wasn't that bad in that second Titans, you know, the game that they had won in Tennessee. Go back and look. He played better than he gets credit for. But the point is he had struggled, right? That had been the narrative. Lamar, he's this great player in the regular season. It hadn't translated and carried over to January. It did on Saturday night. So for me, I put to rest the past games. Now it's just, all right, you're in the here and now. You and believe me, you just laid out, and we've talked about what lies ahead, potential coaching, departures, free agency, the salary cap. Same things Kansas City's dealing with, same things Buffalo is going to deal with, same things Cincinnati's going to deal with in the coming years. When you have a high-priced quarterback, that's the cost of doing business. It makes your roster building challenging. It makes your coaches more attractive, more appealing to other organizations. That's
well,
just
well, hang
part
on.
Of it.
You
Change
mentioned
is inevitable.
Three of those teams. But the Bills have sort of had that, but haven't won. The Bengals took their fans out to L.A. They had a party. They almost won the Super Bowl.
They did.
And,
they didn't
and
win,
did it with
right.
a ragtag offensive line. Like, so – you know, they squeezed the juice, so to speak, and the Chiefs have won championship. You know, so like, there is a point where, like, for our fans to just get to Las Vegas next week and to not lose this significant home, monumental, first time in 53 years kind of game. You know, Lamar goes out and doesn't play well, and the team doesn't play well, and they lose this week. He'll carry whatever Peyton Manning carried.
It'll hurt.
He didn't carry it. You know what I mean? Like,
it'll
yeah,
hurt.
And it'll hurt, and it'll burn. My point about Matt Ryan and that whole litany of guys was that burn, that fire. To your
sure.
point, you were pissed at Lamar. Lamar's pounding the ground. Lamar's a kid. He's 21 years old at the time. They're about to shower him with money. He went into a firestorm with this organization during injury times where he's hurting and in a room, and they're saying, you're a $35 million quarterback. Here, take a limited tag. Go find the market. The market said nothing to him. And, you know, so like, and he said to them, get me some real wide receivers. And they brought him a bonbon with OBJ. Like, all of this happened. Get me an offensive coordinator where I get to call the shots. Meet Mr. Monken. You'll get to check out of plays because that's what you feel like you need if we're going to give you $50 million. Now, all this wasn't spoken through agents, but I promise you all this were the conversations, right?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I guess the point I was trying to make is, losing to Houston, that would have been, I shudder to think what the offseason would have been like. I mean, it would have been unbearable. Let's face it. And it would have been, I think it would have been a case of you're kind of at a loss for words as far as where you go from here.
Well, if the Orioles do what they did last year, the next 3 years and take a facer, we'll be, that's kind of where we're getting with the Ravens with a generational player. I mean, a player who's a Michael Jordan player.
Well, I guess the point I'm trying to make is not that Saturday was the game they had to win. No questions asked, no negotiating whatsoever. It would have been, oh my gosh, what's the disconnect here? Why is this not translating? How are you the number one seed two times in 5 years and you don't get out of the divisional round? They did that. They won. They advanced. Now you're going up against the guy that is the standard. This team has been the standard over the last 5 years since Tom Brady said goodbye in Foxborough and went down to Tampa Bay. It's been Kansas City. They've been to three Super Bowls in 4 years. I mean, that just speaks for itself. So from that standpoint, it's not this Herculean task for the Ravens to win on Sunday. The Ravens are better on paper, but they know that they're playing the team that's been the standard in the same way that Joe Flacco, when they went up to Foxborough, they knew that they were going to be underdogs. Now, they're not underdogs on Sunday, but they know that they're an underdog from a pedigree standpoint, right? Because Kansas City's been there. So, yeah, the pressure is there. And as much as we've talked about this through the lens of everything setting up for the Ravens to make this run, I'm guessing Lamar Jackson's not thinking in those terms. You know what Lamar Jackson's thinking right now? He's tired of hearing about Patrick Mahomes being better than him. Lamar Jackson thinks he's the best in the world. And look, Joe Flacco thought he was the best in the world a decade ago, famously on our airwaves, and created all this buzz that's still talked about today. 11 years later.
You're giving me fodder now. Keep going. You're giving me notes.
But the point is, Lamar Jackson right now, he wants to prove he's the best. And guess what? You can't prove you're the best until you beat Patrick Mahomes and get to a Super Bowl and win a Super Bowl. And then you know what he's going to say then? If he does that over the course of the next 3 weeks, he's going to say, I need to go win another one. But you can't win two until you win one. And you can't win one until you beat Patrick Mahomes and the Chiefs on Sunday. So that's how Lamar Jackson's thinking about this. Now, he might not state that explicitly. He's not going to be disrespectful. He has a lot of respect for Patrick Mahomes. He knows Mahomes has been at the top of the mountain twice already in his young career. But Lamar's chasing that. And Lamar has his best chance yet to do something about that. So I think that's how Lamar Jackson's viewing this. Now, that's not in his con, you know, that's not in the forefront of his thinking this week. You know, he's focused on how's he going to beat the Kansas City defense, you know, and what are they going to do offensively to move the ball more consistently for 60 minutes, not just rely on a big second half. But yeah, I think that's how Lamar, you know, if you had the truth serum and you were just talking to Lamar off the record and just having a conversation with him, you'd say, yeah, you know what? I think I can be, I think I'm as good and can be better than Patrick Mahomes. But until I beat him on this stage and until I get to a Super Bowl and win that one, and then I need to do it again, then I don't have much of an argument other than just how I feel internally about it. So I think that's where it is for Lamar. But again, this is his first great opportunity. Now, they had a great opportunity in 19, but they squandered it. So it was over. You know, the moment's over. You move on at that point in time. But for him, it was so important. It was the biggest moment of his career on Saturday night, that second half that he had, because we hadn't seen that before. We've seen it now. We can put that extreme narrative to bed, but now it's just the run of the mill, just like any other quarterback. You're going up against another great quarterback. You're going up against another great team. Joe Flacco and the Ravens in 09, they went to Foxborough and they won. In 11, they went up there and lost in heartbreaking fashion. And then in 12, they finally broke through. 2 years later, they went back there and they lost. So, you know, this isn't for Lamar Jackson. I don't think this is as a culmination as much as he's trying to view it as the beginning of building an even more amazing legacy than he already has built to this point in the regular season. So, you know, I think that's
Well,
where
Mahomes
he is.
can't prove anything on the road because he's never had an opportunity, right? Like to say he can or can't win on the road. He was very vocal in the aftermath on Sunday night of saying, we can win anywhere. We could, you know, he's got a chip on his shoulder saying, oh, you think I can't go into Baltimore and win and go to and break their
These guys
hearts? I'd like
great.
to go in and break their hearts, you know? He's looking forward to being the NWO and coming in here, you know?
Yeah, I mean that's what makes these guys great. You know, we've talked about this for years. I mean, for years the debate, and I know you're not a big NBA guy, but you know, LeBron James and Michael Jordan and all that. I mean, Michael Jordan, I mean, the things that he would use as motivation, as what's perceived as slights. I mean, even the documentary that ESPN did during the pandemic, remember the number of times he's sitting in the chair and I took that personally. And, you know, it might be the most innocuous comment that he would take exception to, but that's how the absolute greatest work. I mean, they will take any little morsel of information, any little tiny event that occurs, and they'll use that as motivation. I mean, Lamar Jackson's been using for 5 years the fact that every team in the NFL, including the Baltimore Ravens earlier in that first round, passed over him. They said, nah, we're good. And this past offseason, all 31 teams, and even count the Ravens because they placed the non-exclusive tag on him, all said, we don't want you. You know, he's using that as motivation. Now, you know, perception versus reality, whatever. I mean, that, you know, we went over all that. We don't need to rehash that. But Lamar Jackson, the competitor? The competitive individual, the drive that he has to be great, he's used all of that. I mean, that's how anyone, you know, to be great, you're motivated. It's either intrinsic or it comes from the outside, or in most cases, both. You use a combination. So, you know, that's where Lamar is at this point, but this is his first time being on this stage and having this opportunity. And as much as he internally wants to be the absolute best, he knows that going through Kansas City is the next step in doing that. So I'm sure he's embracing that. I'm sure, you know, and it's not just him, it's this entire team. You know, right on down to Justin Tucker, who's back in the AFC Championship for the first time in 11 years after winning a Super Bowl as a rookie. You know, you mentioned Cal Ripken a few minutes ago. I mean, Justin Tucker's not Cal Ripken, and it, you know,
Well,
in terms
Justin
of
Tucker's going
reverence,
to get
but
called on. He's going to be a factor in the game on Sunday. He's going to get called on to kick a hard field goal, extra points, all of that.
and who
And
else would you want?
right. And there's your insurance. You know, you feel like, well, he's not going to screw it up, right? I mean, you feel that way. And especially to my point, Texans go in up 13-10. The conversation's even worse than it is. And it feels even differently. Not to say the second half wouldn't have played out identically, but there is a point where you saw a guy miss a field goal that might have made the difference in whether their season went on or not on the road on a cold day in Baltimore.
Yeah, well, take it a step further. Look what happened in
Bills.
Buffalo.
Yeah.
I mean, that they could have gone to overtime and win, you know? So yeah, that's of the utmost importance. And I think for as much as Justin Tucker did not have the best season of his career, I think he'd be the first to tell you that, and had a few more issues than normal with some long distance kicks. Keep in mind, a couple of those were blocked, and some weird things happened as well. It wasn't just him missing outright all the time, but hit a 53 yarder. And I can tell you, look, watching pregame warmups, I mean, that wind was a challenge. I saw him on that side of the field trying from about 50, and he kind of made, had his normal kick, his conventional approach, and he came up a little short, and he was having to kick more of a line drive. So, both kickers were having their issues in pregame. So that was not, needless to say, not an easy day to kick given the temperature and the wind chill fact, the winds and that factor. So it's another big factor. Kansas City has a good kicker as well, who's had success and did a terrific job for them in the insane cold against Miami. But if you're asking me which kicker I want, it's Justin Tucker every day of the week. So that's another edge for the Ravens. But they're all trying. This is where legacies are defined. Odell Beckham said it last week. He was asked about Zay Flowers and gave an answer that might as well have applied to Lamar Jackson and every single guy on the team, coaches and players. He said, "Look, regular season's fun, and that's great, but this is when history begins, so to speak, in terms of how they view you." And for Lamar, I mean, this is Saturday was such an important step for him against Houston, kind of put to bed the extreme nature of that narrative of why can't you play like this in January when you're so great in the regular season? He did that. So now it's just much more run-of-the-mill pressure of it's January and it's time to break through. And quarterbacks like you mentioned Peyton Manning, there's a great example. Peyton Manning eventually broke through, but you know what? He was still up and down over the course of his career. And the reason why, it's really, really hard to do this. And that's why Tom Brady is viewed as the greatest of all time, not because of his Pro Bowls, not because of the 2007 historic 50 touchdown passes. It's because of what he did in January and February. And Patrick Mahomes is at this point on his way to maybe being somewhere in that stratosphere, but Lamar has other ideas, right? Josh Allen has tried to have other ideas. It hasn't worked out for him in January, going up against Mahomes, but Lamar finally gets his first shot on Sunday. So get the popcorn ready. I mean, I can't wait for this because you're talking about two of the, for my money right now in 2024, it's two best quarterbacks on the planet right now. Lamar has been the best this season. Mahomes has been clearly the best over the last 5 years. So can't ask for any more than that. I mean, that's to your point, this feels in that way, this feels more like the true Super Bowl, even though if the Ravens are fortunate enough to get through and play in Vegas, they'll still have to deal with San Francisco or Detroit.
Luke Jones will be dealing with all things Ravens out in Owings Mills all week long. I have just such an incredible litany of guests here all week. At some point, I'm going to shave. We are doing Crab Cake Row. A cup of soup or bowl is our promotion for the Maryland Food Bank. You listed the beginning part of this segment. I told a story about Wayne Kostrowski and hunger. We're going to be featuring 100 charities that week. I got about 30 books so far. Ness at BaltimorePositive.com. If you have a charity to recommend that's local that can make it out that week, we have 124. I've done the math on this segments, and we're going to feature 100 different charities that week. We're going to start the week at Lexington Market at Fadley's. Tuesday, we're going to be at Costas Inn, established in 1971 at Dundalk, MD. Come on out, North Point Boulevard. We'll be there all day Tuesday. We're doing live radio for the first time in 10 years, 9 to 5 live from all these locations. Wednesday at Coco's. Thursday, we're going to be at State Fair in Catonsville. And then on Friday at Pappas in Cockeysville. And 1 hour, one victory, slaying the giants of Kelce and Mahomes and Reed and even Taylor Swift will be here, I'm sure, having a crab cake at some point this week as well. It's going to be a big, big week. We've got you covered. Peter King, Brian Billick, Brandon Stokely, Kim Herring, Joe Flacco, Marvin Lewis. Invites that Jamal Lewis is coming on. So all the Lewises. Maybe I get Jermaine Lewis on too as well. We're going to be doing it. Maybe I get Lewis Black on to talk some more real baseball, but we'll do that when it's baseball season. The AFC Championship game is in Baltimore. The Kansas City Chiefs are coming to town. And we've got you full coverage. Any breaking news happens first on the WNST text service. Luke has that handled as well. Whew! Man, I'm going to stop on Sunday, get a big a basket of chicken. I'm going to bring it home with some Western fries and some ketchup. I'm going to put some beer out, and I'm just going to sit and watch football all day. I've attended about a dozen of these championship games. It's going to be in the low 40s from what I'm understanding here. There was some rain in the forecast. We don't know. But it's going to be very, very civil. And from a weather standpoint, and I think this is going to be one of the great days in Baltimore sports history. So I'm looking forward to watching it all unfold and being a part of it. I'm Nestor. He's Luke. We are WNST, AM 1570, Towson, Baltimore. And we never stop talking. A cup of Super Bowl and Baltimore positive.